A bill aimed at the Marion County prosecutor's marijuana policy. Mike Braun defends President Trump, plus the first bill signed into law this year, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 31st, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a Senate committee approved a bill that retaliates against Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears over his decision not to prosecute simple marijuana possession by empowering the Attorney General to take over those cases. The bill says if a local prosecutor makes a policy decision not to prosecute certain crimes, the Indiana Attorney General can appoint a special prosecutor to do so and charge the county to pay for it. Parvane Stover represents the AG.
If you don't like the laws on the books, come to the State House and lobby to change them. Don't just pick and choose to enforce the laws that you want to.
Dave Powell represents the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council. He says a local prosecutor's discretion is their holy grail.
You know, I filed the death penalty three times in my 20 years. I know of electeds that would never file the death penalty because they don't believe in it. So should they be removed from office?
The committee passed the bill 6-3, though some who voted for it expressed serious reservations. Is the General Assembly right to step in here? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, should Ryan Mears be allowed to just stop prosecuting some crimes?
I think locally, I think county elected prosecutors should retain the right to have that discretion they've always had. And the interesting part of this is the issue. First of all, the General Assembly didn't take this up. The Senate Corrections Committee took this, so we'll see if the rest of the General Assembly takes it up.
It's on the Senate floor
next week.
We'll see what happens.
This thing isn't certain, but what fascinates me about this is the situation we're talking about here is Ryan Mears, who announces when he's running in a caucus for prosecutor to replace Terry Curry, in what became kind of a proxy election between the mayor and prosecutor Curry, Mayor Hogsett and prosecutor, who are on opposite sides of this caucus. He announces in a very loud way that if he's elected, he's not going to prosecute these.
Which, by the way, was already policy.
It just wasn't like announced at a press. Which is probably how it should be. So you don't exacerbate the problem you already apparently cannot get your arms around it in Marion County. So you have that, and the answer to that is to give Curtis Hill, who we've talked about once or twice on this show,
just a little
as
bit,
a Republican legislature, more power to go appoint a special prosecutor in some way, basically set up another prosecutor in the county that is able to override the elected prosecutor. On a marijuana case, so if you're a legislator, you may be motivated to support that kind of expansion of power for the AG if you're against marijuana legalization. So it's an interesting issue in that it gets involved in this. It started in this local Marion County prosecutor's race, and now is left to the Senate, the full Senate to decide whether or not to go forward.
The senators who voted for this and who clearly support this idea, because some of them who voted for it didn't necessarily support the idea, but the ones who did said, we're not about taking away prosecutorial discretion. Prosecutors make decisions all the time about we're going to prosecute this one, we're not going to prosecute that one. But they are talking about when you say, I'm just not going to charge people for this crime, should you be allowed to do that?
You know what? That's what elections are all about. If the people in Marion County don't like that approach, they have an obvious remedy. They vote them out of office, okay? So this is taking away prosecutorial discretion because there are finite resources, finite jail beds, finite numbers of prosecutors, and each prosecutor in the state, in all 92 counties, or however many we have now, I think two of them are together, but they have the discretion to prioritize which ones they're going to look at. The idea that Creepy Curtis and then Senator Mike Young can decide that prosecutorial discretion is on the way out is ridiculous. I mean, if the voters of Marion County don't like Ryan Mears' approach, they have a remedy at the ballot box. But I think you're going to find that this is what's happening in almost all of the counties in the state because there are not enough jail beds and there are too many serious, violent crimes that need prosecution. So they should just stay out of it. You know, every time the legislature gets involved in something they're not ordinarily involved in, they generally screw it up. And this is a perfect example.
Technically, the Attorney General's office signed up neutral. So
they signed
up neutral.
So
technically,
they'd be
happy to do it.
Yeah, that's true. Mike mentioned kind of in his part where the future of this bill is very much in flux. We don't know what it'll look like on the Senate floor, but we did talk to Brian Bosma about this issue, and he didn't seem particularly sold.
Yeah, he definitely did not seem sold about it. I mean, I think one thing that, you know, I think lawmakers have to ask themselves, do they trust people to choose their elected officials or do they not? And also, it's really interesting, we frame this all around marijuana, but this would be any crime. And so if there's a sheriff out there, which I think there is one somewhere in the state, who isn't, you know, what if they say, I'm not going to prosecute anyone who takes a gun on school grounds? You know, so then we're taking that. Or we have prosecutors who maybe for moral reasons or financial reasons don't file death penalty cases. So, I mean, this bill goes a lot further than just simple possession of marijuana.
Right.
Mike Young said multiple times when he presented the bill, when he was defending the bill, that he had already started to write it and that it's not a before Ryan Mears announced his policy and that it's not about Ryan Mears at all. That it's, he saw a trend of what he called social justice prosecuting around the country and he wanted to head it off the path.
And that Second Amendment.
Yeah. Are you buying that argument?
Well, there was reference to a few other cases around the country in Dallas and a few other jurisdictions, but as a practical matter, I think that since this is in Mike Young's backyard, he was aware of it. It's something that probably stuck in his craw. I think even though there may be other instances that he could point to with whatever this social justice prosecuting is, a term I had not heard before, I think that's probably what motivated it. Because, as Nikki said, we didn't see it when in Jennings County, the sheriff, which was the one you alluded to, about sanctuary county for gun rights, or, you know, I could see it, you mentioned death penalty, I could see it also with abortion clinic protests and so forth. I mean, this is one of those things where it sort of is a recipe for buyer's remorse if for states that go down this path, just as we've seen with sentencing requirements for judges, you know, those get imposed either at the federal or state level, and all of a sudden, invariably, you have these situations where, why is this case where this, you know, there's so many mitigating circumstances that anybody with an ounce of common sense would say that doesn't make sense, but it is the law.
Right. Well, Indiana freshman Senator Mike Braun has been one of the most visible Republicans in recent days defending Donald Trump as the president's impeachment trial in the Senate goes on. Braun has appeared on multiple national media outlets and held almost daily press conferences leading the charge to fight for President Trump's acquittal. That includes an appearance on CNN where Braun argued the Senate shouldn't hear from witnesses like John Bolton.
I think in many places people are upset that we even went down the trail in the first place. That would be the consensus in Indiana due to the underpinnings of the case.
A report in the New York Times details an alleged conversation between Trump and former National Security Advisor Bolton, in which Bolton says Trump told him in August last year to continue freezing military aid to Ukraine until officials there investigated the Biden family. Those allegations come from a draft of Bolton's book manuscript. Andalini, are you surprised that Braun is suddenly so out front and so visible on all this?
I'd say I'm more disappointed. You know, I think when he was in the legislature, he had a reputation for being difficult, but for having integrity, and he's lost it completely here. Because when you get up front and you say, not I'm holding my nose, this conduct is unacceptable and all, but I'm worried about my reelection and I don't want to, you know, ruffle feathers, and you're going to vote against having witnesses and testimony and you're going to vote to impeach, that's one thing. But when you get out there and you start defending conduct, which is basically attempted extortion of an ally who's in a state of war, to have that ally announce an investigation of a political rival for your own political gain, when you start defending that, which is what he's doing, and holding that up and saying it's perfect conduct, which is, of course, the president's word, like perfect phone call, you have lost whatever integrity you might have had. And frankly, I think he's an embarrassment to the state of Indiana and to the office he holds.
Mike Braun's first year in the Senate was spent working on not necessarily partisan issues, really attacking health care, which he talked about on the campaign trail, prescription drug prices, things like that. And now all of a sudden, this.
Well, yeah, because both houses of Congress have decided that this is what we're doing, or the House Democrats decided we are only talking about impeachment. So whatever bipartisan work we're doing on health care or anything else is now on hold because it's an election year. We're going to prosecute this impeachment trial. So the idea that Mike Braun isn't toiling away behind the scenes trying to pass a health care bill that Democrats will never pass because they have no interest in it doesn't matter.
And where's Todd Young? It makes
it obvious.
Where's Todd Young? He's curiously silent on this, isn't he?
They've both taken different tacks on this, but part of the reason for that is, I mean, Todd Young is in charge of all Senate races this year for Republicans. He's got to go defend the majority, but he's still sitting in the
chamber during this.
Well, he is, but he's also taking a much different approach, and he has from the beginning. He wasn't a hardliner when this came over. He was very open and said, look, I'm going to listen to this process as it plays out. That's what he's doing.
Part of this is, what impact does it have on Mike Braun? First of all, he's not going to be up for re-election until 2024. So right off the bat, it's not like he's got something right over his shoulder to worry about. But also, he said it in the clip, I don't think Hoosiers are interested in this going any further or interested in witnesses and all that. Do you think that's true, too?
I don't think, because of the time gap between now and when he faces voters, it really matters one way or the other. If anything, it's probably, again, this is just a crass political observation.
Which is probably
a good way for a freshman to get on a national radar for donors, for potential support from PACs across the country that might be predisposed to these positions, because they will remember. And he'll be on the radar. He'll be a name that they recognize, a face that they recognize. Whereas Hoosier voters, what happens he's doing now probably will be largely forgotten, forgiven, whatever.
So he sold his soul and his integrity for money, is what you're saying.
Don't put words in my mouth. I offered you a political calculation. I think that's
a political calculation.
To that end, then, is there perhaps only upside for Mike Braun here, that if there's a negative for some people, it will be forgotten by the time he's actually up for re-election?
Trump is still vastly, you know, popular here in Indiana, so I don't think there's a real downside for him in Indiana. I do think it's interesting to sort of track what he feels. Like, you know, at first it was like it didn't happen, and, you know, then maybe, well, it was inappropriate, I hope he learns for it. Now it's like, even if it did happen, it's not impeachable. Like, there's a little bit of a roller coaster. The only thing I know for sure is he's going to acquit him.
Yeah. That's a very safe bet.
There was any evidence presented.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, what effect will Senator Mike Braun's outspoken defense of President Trump during his impeachment trial have? It'll A, help Braun, B, hurt Braun, or C, won't make much impact? Last week's question, we asked you, should Indiana allow speed cameras in highway work zones, a bill that did pass to the floor this week? 77% of you say yes, 23% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Governor Holcomb signed into legislation this week that spends $291 million to pay cash for higher education building projects, and that's the first bill signed into law this year. Indiana finished the last budget cycle with nearly $300 million more than it expected. Republicans this session decided to spend that money paying cash for higher ed capital projects they had already approved. In a statement, Governor Holcomb points out doing so, instead of bonding those projects, will save the state more than $135 million over the next 20 years. But Democrats said for weeks the money should be spent on other priorities. Chief among them, they say, is teacher pay. Nikki Kelly, it is very unusual to get a bill signed into law before the first half of the session is even over. Why the rush on this one?
I think it's pretty clear that they didn't want to be answering the questions for the whole session about, you know, why aren't we using this for insulin or pre-K or teacher pay, and I think this way it just gets it out of the way. I mean, it's hard for people to build a coalition against a bill and pressure it if it's already done. I do think it's interesting that the bill that we came in saying we were going to do immediately because it was really important, the Hold Harmless bill, which actually impacts when teachers get bonuses, that bill's not done yet.
Is that the problem, that this was the first? I mean, it's one thing if, for maybe political reasons, you want to rush through this. If you want to rush through this bill, I think she thinks it's definitely political reasons. It's one thing if you want to rush it through for political reasons, but when it's the very first bill you sign into law, does that look okay?
I think it probably doesn't matter what it looks like. Again, there are 291 million reasons to do it now, and I think Nikki was right on target. As long as that's not a done deal, you have some movement out there, some hope, some sort of crazy Hail Mary pass, you know, if you, let's get a sports metaphor in here. We can't go a show without one. You know, maybe somehow we can change a few minds and we can, you know, somehow wrestle some of those dollars from cause A to cause B. Now that that's signed, that's not going to happen. I think you have a basically, it's a fait accompli, and you have a real recognition now on the part of whether it's teachers or other groups that, okay, let's turn our attention now as it relates to additional funding, not to the next 5 weeks or whatever, but rather to next year in the budget cycle.
Obviously, Democrats are already building the, you know, the sort of attack campaign around the fact that there was no spending this session on teacher pay. Buildings over people line has been used more than a few times, including on this show. But does
they
this
the swine barn
does
out.
Yeah, that's sure. True? They took the swine barn out. But does rushing this through give more ammo to those Democrats?
I don't know. I mean, to the extent that people are well educated in traditional legislative process,
but they don't necessarily have to. All you say is they rushed it through and didn't give us a chance to do X, Y, and Z.
Well, they all had a chance to vote on it, and they all had a chance to hear it in committee and hear it on the floor twice and propose amendments to it twice, right, in the House and Senate. I don't disagree that you just want it out. You want it off the table. This is a little bit of a chaotic session. There's 900,000 bills that were filed in a very and heard over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. you don't know what the end of the session is going to look like, and if you want to get your policy priorities done, why would you leave $291 million sitting out there for leverage? Or to Nikki's point, yeah, I mean, once everyone decided this is how we're spending this one-time extra influence.
When
the people that matter, the people that matter can actually get a bill passed. Yeah. Yes, the Republican leaders.
But, you know, to a certain point, is this? It's a little too inside baseball for the general public to sort of understand.
I don't think it's too inside baseball for the teachers of the state to understand that there was $291 million, and instead, when we have our excellent credit rating and the lowest interest rates that are out there, instead of capitalizing projects, which is what all homeowners do by taking out mortgages, and instead of paying for buildings that we're going to use for 30 years, over 30 years, we spent all the available cash on building them right now, lest we invest in the future, either in teachers or in pre-K or in healthcare or in any of the needs that this state has.
I wouldn't pay cash for my house
if I
have cash.
If you had it, yeah, right. But the governor has no vision about things he wants to do, so from his point of view, getting the money off the table is the right thing to do.
All right. Well, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee this week put Indiana's 5th District candidate, Christina Hale, on its first list to get targeted help in the 2020 cycle. Hale, a former state representative and lieutenant governor candidate, is running to replace retiring GOP Congresswoman Susan Brooks in the Central Indiana District. The DCCC named Hale as one of 12 candidates in its Red to Blue program, which targets Republican seats. The committee cited Hale's fundraising efforts so far this cycle as part of the reason she was put on the list. Hale is one of 4 Democrats who filed to run for the seat, along with Jennifer Christie, Andy Jacobs, and Dee Thornton. There are currently 10 Republicans on the ballot in the 5th District. John Schwanis, I think you hear this sort of story, and I think the average person, maybe the first question that comes to our mind is, and? It's like, what is this, what impact does something like this have?
Well, let's ask Congressman Brendan Mueller. I forget, he's not a congressman, but he was the last Democrat in 2012 to get this designation. I'm being somewhat flippant because it didn't work for him. He's not in Congress.
It was a different district, too.
Obviously. Oh, yeah, it was 2nd District.
Was
yeah.
district.
But my point
Jackie
is, this is the first time a Hoosier Democrat at this point in the process
has gotten the first list.
In a district that's evolving Democratic.
All right. Please forgive me for being flippant. All right.
All right.
I won't.
I try, John.
All right. I'll just stick with something we can just understand here. It's good, though, that notwithstanding for her, because, again, it opens kind of what we were just talking about before with Senator Braun, in terms of his visibility with deep-pocketed groups, PACs, activists within the party. Same thing here. This is putting her on the radar in a way that will be beneficial to her financially and in terms of organizational heft and support. Again, back to where I started with the rather flippant remark about Brendan Mueller. Does this solve her every problem, and does this ensure that she will be in Congress? No, clearly not.
Is this really fundamentally just about money?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's nice to be on a list, but, you know, to quote Cuba Gooding Jr., you know, show me the money. Like, it doesn't mean anything unless the checks come in and she can, you know, parlay those into structure and building support out there in the district.
To a certain extent, though, I mean, I don't see a lot of other Democratic races being, or congressional races being competitive in the general election this cycle. So
in
it was
state.
Money in this state, in this state. So was money really going to be the problem anyway? I mean, weren't they going to have the money no matter what?
She's been raising a considerable amount of money. But, you know, as you're wont to say with Governor Holcomb, there's no such thing as being too thin or too rich, okay? And if you have a campaign coffers that are full and you have the target, then you've got volunteers, you've told everybody that you expect to take up this race, and in sharp contrast to the second district, which had just been redistricted to include heavy Republican territory, this is evolving towards Democratic. Christina Hale is a very, very strong candidate, and the Republicans are split 10 different ways and probably will wind up with a right winger.
I want to ask about that point. What do you think Christina Hale is happier about, being on this list or looking across the field and seeing 10 Republicans in that primary?
Look, that'll resolve itself, and it typically does. The days are over of putting a lot of stock in having a multi, you know, having 8 or 9 or 10 people in a primary. The cycles are so stretched out anymore. The memories are so short. People aren't going to remember, you know, voting for the guy who came in ninth when it's Kelly Mitchell or whoever winds up coming out of this. But this does, if you're a Republican, put an emphasis on electability in the primary. I wouldn't say the fifth is trending Democratic. It's certainly trending moderate, or just a switch vote.
Yeah, it looks a lot more purple than
people are willing to cross lines, but maybe, you know, people with no party identity certainly has increased in that district, as has in the suburbs generally.
All right. Well, the first presidential contest of the 2020 cycle is finally here as Iowans prepare to head to their caucuses Monday. Well, former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg was one of only two of the top-tier Democratic candidates not stuck in Washington, D.C. for much of the week at the impeachment trial. That left the 38-year-old Hoosier and former VP Joe Biden to crisscross the Hawkeye state, stumping for votes as the caucuses near. Polls in recent weeks have been all over the place, with each of the top four candidates, Buttigieg, Biden, and Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, leading at one time or another. There's also an added wrinkle this year. Iowa Democrats will report out both a total vote winner and the candidate who wins the most state delegate equivalents, and that might not be the same person. All right, panelists, I want to ask for a few predictions. First, it's getting harder to say one person will win the Iowa caucus, but if there is one person who's going to win the Iowa caucus, who will it be? I'll start with you, Mike.
Bernie Sanders is looking like he is surging at the right time. I mean, really, like he is shot up in any of these polls, which I don't believe, by the way. I don't believe any of these polls. I mean, I can't possibly believe any American would vote for Bernie Sanders, but it looks like the Democrats in Iowa might.
Who's going to win the Iowa caucus?
I don't know who's going to win the Iowa caucus. I think it is so volatile, and having been to several of those caucuses,
and Iowans have a history of volatility.
That's exactly right. And the predictions in 2016 and 2012 and 8 were all wrong.
I don't agree. I agree. I have no idea. Every poll is different.
Right.
I think if you forced me, I'd probably say Biden.
Given what I laid out there, there's a different process this time. You have a delegate count winner and a vote winner that are potentially different. Is there even going to be a winner from the Iowa caucus?
The spin will be incredible here. If you think this will be, the forces at play will be greater than any tsunami or hurricane we've seen here, as people try to say that a fourth place is actually a win and a win is actually bad. That's what we're going to see play out in the next few weeks.
Where will Pete Buttigieg finish in Iowa?
I'm hoping he finishes no lower than third. I hope that. But remember, it's also important to remember that coming out of the Iowa caucuses winning does not mean by any means that you get the nomination.
But you start to build momentum, hopefully.
Presumably, at least to New Hampshire, and then that momentum can shift.
Which is just a week.
Which is a week away.
Where is Buttigieg going to finish?
I'd like him to finish second, if not just come out of nowhere and win it.
But
really?
Top four, if he's below four, it's a real morning.
Oh, yeah. I think three is realistic.
Does anybody drop out of the candidates after Iowa?
Not in the top four or five.
I don't think out of the top four.
Yeah. Nobody
yeah, not out
they'll
of the
try
court
to get to
they'll,
Super
they'll,
Tuesday.
They'll at least get through New Hampshire for sure. All right, well, finally, I am looking for one more prediction.
one I'm considerably more interested in. Who's going to win Super Bowl 54 between the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs? Andalina, I'll start this one with you.
I'm not even sure I'm going to watch it, okay?
Oh, no.
But I'm going to go with the 49ers just because of that assistant offensive coach that went to school in Goshen.
That's true.
You just can't enjoy anything, can you?
I enjoy lots of things, but not professional football.
I think this would be a really good game. The line on it's pretty, it's tight. I mean, the odds makers.
So are you going to take a position or not?
We'll say the Chiefs.
We'll say.
Team in red.
Is that the royal we?
Team in red. Yeah. That's a John Schwannis answer.
Yeah,
that's
Chiefs. My history as a Bengals fan precludes me from rooting for San Francisco for anything.
That's completely
so
fair.
So definitely
that's
Chiefs.
Robbie Gould, former Bears kicker, plays for the 49ers. I'll be rooting for Robbie and the Niners as a result. That's right. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.